Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, the sea shanty phenomenon sweeping social media and the sailing ships of Wexford. The Sailing Ships of Wexford is the title of a new book sent to me recently, which recounts every sailing ship from the port between the 1840s and 1940s. By Brian Clear and Jack O'Leary, it's a stunning publication, with hundreds of drawings and paintings by Brian illustrating every one of the ships which operated out of the port in that century. Jack O'Leary, like the rest of us, is in lockdown in Wexford. But earlier today, he told me how he came to write the book.
I've always been collecting details, registration details of Wexford ships for years. And I've got them from all kinds of strange places. Probably even out of a skip, I found two boxes of registrations, handwritten registrations. So I've had them, and I had an interest in ships, Wexford sailing ships not in general. 4 years ago, Brian Clare, a friend of mine, who was a renowned maritime artist, Brian asked me would I be interested in doing the book. And I said, okay, so we got at it. Brian, all the illustrations and paintings, bar three, in this book are by Brian.
So it's called Sailing Ships of Wexford from the 1840s to the 1940s.
Yep.
Wexford was, in this era, one of the main ports in Ireland.
Yes, it was quite a busy port for many years. It was damnified, as someone wrote years ago, by an awfully bad harbour mouth, the Bar of Wexford, which ships got stuck on it and more ships got lost on it. But still, despite that, it was a very busy port. And then New Ross, of course, was massively... New Ross was even the bigger port, busier port, with much larger tonnage than Wexford Town had. Graves and New Ross were a very, very, very big ship owners.
Why were those two ports so important in Ireland of the time?
One of our main trades in the 1800s from Wexford was to a place called Galați in Romania. Galati, I think, is now known as. And the Wexford ships went up there, oh God, three and four at a time, went up there to collect grain, bring grain back to Wexford. And that was distributed then from Wexford up the river, up the Slaney by a little craft called Gabbards, up the Slaney to Enniscorthy, to the mills and that, and further afield to mills as well. And that was a very, very, very prominent trade in Wexford for many years.
Quite incredible journey to get there, because they had to leave New Ross or Wexford into the Mediterranean, right to the other end of the Med, over towards Turkey, and navigate the river.
Well, what they did was, the Wexford ships, anyone predicted, they left Wexford in ballast or with maybe pit props over to the Bristol Channel ports, you know, Cardiff, Swansea, Newport.
Ballast mean they're carrying water or rocks or whatever, just to keep them stable.
Wexford, it was sand. To go from the farther end up, further up the Slaney. But anyway, what they did then was they unloaded their ballast and they loaded coal. And the coal brought them, they brought the coal to the coaling stations, I would say Malta, Gibraltar. At that time, the steamers were becoming very, very prominent, and they had the needed coal to fuel them. So they had coaling stations. So the Wexford ships brought the coal out of these stations, and then through the Mediterranean up into the Black Sea. But then they went up the Danube to Galați, and they got up there not easily, and they loaded the grain there and brought it back to Wexford.
You tell stories that getting up that part of the river, sometimes the crew would have to just get out of the boat and tow it up along by ropes.
Yes, by hand, and they were in an awful state. They were going through walking through swamps and snakes and mosquitoes in particular. Apparently after the first night, most of them couldn't even see. They were covered in mosquito bites. And that took 3 weeks sometimes to do that, you know.
You have lots of stories of the ships here, but you mentioned one family, the Graves family. They were very important players.
They were very, very important players in New Ross. And they also had a branch in Liverpool. One of them, Robert Graves, a very prominent man in Liverpool, he owned something like 50 ships out of Liverpool. And Graves had things like the Lady Bagot and principally the Don Brodie. That one is the best known one there now on account of the replica that's on the keys in Euros right now, you know. But yeah, Graves were very progressive. There was no doubt about that there.
When you talk about these ships and these companies, you have a little piece on each of the ships. You're able to name the crews.
Yes.
You have some letters which relate to various voyages they undertook. Where did you get all that information?
Well, when I was going through the details were taken off ship's articles. And ship's articles are when a man joins a ship, he signs articles, which is basically the contract between him and the ship.
And where did you find those?
The National Archives in Fisher Street in Dublin. They have an extensive collection of them there, and some of them even you got details of what happened to the ship in the odd occasion there, you know.
Yeah, you said you found some of these in a skip.
Yes, yes.
How?
I just happened to be walking by a skip on a side street off the quay in Wexford, and There were some chaps up in the window throwing stuff into the skip, and one of them knew me, and he knew my interest. He said, "Hey, the stuff here beyond the ships, you want to have a look at it?" So they were in the skip at the stage. So two cardboard boxes, and it was all handwritten copies of ship's articles. I think they had been collected by a FOSS scheme or something years previously, you know. So I straight away hopped into my car, went down, put them in the back, and brought them home. And I filed them away as well, so I had all that stuff, you know. And then to actually make sure everything was right, myself and Brian spent, oh God, hours and hours and days going through Lloyd's lists year after year to make sure all the details were right. So we're fairly confident that everything we say about a ship, like the Don Brodie, she was built in Quebec, and she was a barque of 458 ton. We have her dimensions. And then her code number, her international codes, a call sign, and we have her owners, and what ended her, who her final owner was, and what became of her. She was lost, as it happens, out in the Atlantic somewhere, I think, things like that. So we got all, and then going through the local papers, we found any details we could find of the ships.
You have a drawing or a picture of each one as well.
Yes, yes, Brian. And I have to say that the drawings, the paintings of Brian's are historically correct for a ship of his type of the time. Most of the Wexford ships were built in Canada. They were all in Quebec or New Brunswick or some of the Canadian, they were the Canadian provinces, the Maritimes. That's when most of the Wexford ships, I think most of the Irish ships, in fact, would have come from there, because what they did was they built the ship in Canada and they loaded her up with cargo, brought her over to Ireland, sold the cargo, and then sold the ship.
The Wexford ships that went all over the world, there are one or two I'm going to ask you about. The Lady Bagot is one.
Yeah, the Lady Bagot was one of Graves of New Ross.
She was involved in a rescue, and then the crew had to be rescued themselves.
She was on the run from to St. John's, New Brunswick. She had 320 passengers. And anyway, she was on her way back when she got it. She rescued the men off her ship. Then she came to her end herself out in the Atlantic. But they were very lucky for ships at the time. There was an American steamer stood by them while they got off, so they all hands got off her.
And you have letters from the people who did the rescuing, the rescuers, that you were able to find from Canada.
Yeah, that was a massive amount of stuff we found on that. And a lot. We actually got some good information from the Waterford Institute of Technology as well. They have the Graves papers down there, or a section of the Graves papers, the Graves Company's papers.
There was another ship you mentioned to me, which is the Hantoon.
The Hantoon, yeah. She's the probably the best known Wexford town ship. She was built, another one built in New Brunswick in Rotsey in 1861. And she was owned in Wexford by R&R Allen and then by Devericks and Doyle. She was on her way home from Galatz as well on the 26th of December 1881, and she was run down off Cape St. Vincent. She was run down by a steamer called the Rotsey, and it was a tragic thing, but a stupid one, because what happened was the mate on the man on the wheel in the Rotsey lookout said, "Look, there's a sailing ship ahead." But the mate on the Rotsey gave. He said it hit hard to starboard, it hit hard to port, and so the Rotsey ploughed right into it, right into the hand. It was a lovely, clear night, clear as day. And by a strange coincidence, there was five men, I think, on the Rotsey lost, and they're all of the Christians' names was John. John Neal, John Garrett, John Carley, John Cullen. Four. And they were the four lost on her.
And these were all days pre-radio, pre-radar, everything like that, pre-electricity.
Yeah, there's nothing at all.
You have many tales of ships who went missing without trace, just went seen and then vanished.
Most of them did. The Alert was one Wexford ship on the way home from Galatz as well, as it happens. And she just vanished. She passed by Malta on her way home, flew the signals for Wish Me Well, and she was never heard of again. That was it. She was gone. Mm. And they said, like, some weeks later that a piece of a name board of a ship with the letters ERT was washed up down the coast in Wexford, but that I could never confirm that. She just vanished. And that's what happened. Many of them, they went out, and that was a letter they were never heard of anymore. You know?
You published the book last year. Where can we get it?
It's only available in it's not available online except through by mail you can get it. The book centre in South Main Street, Wexford, they operate a postal service.
Okay, it's a very large bookshop.
Yeah. The book centre in Waterford. The Selsker bookshop on North Main Street in Wexford. Reader's Paradise on North Main Street, Wexford. Kehoe's Marine Stores in Kilmore Quay, Wexford. The Zosimus bookshop on the Main Street in Goree. We also go to an Artlow, Dunbrody. But one of our main outlets is the Rosslare Harbour Maritime Heritage Centre at Kilran, and they do a postal service, and they sell the book on site as well.
It's a labour of love.
It's a labour of love, exactly, yeah. There's no doubt about that. The lads in Rosslare Harbour are great.
Tell me something about Brian, because the paintings and the drawings are stunning.
Oh, they are, there's no doubt about it. He's a very talented man, Brian is. Myself and Brian worked together on the Rosslare boats years ago. That's how I knew him. He's actually a Welshman, but he lives in Passage East in the County of Waterford. And there's hardly a maritime book or publication in Ireland that hasn't got a painting of by Brian Clare on it, on the cover usually, you know. So what you get there is accurate. You know, it's not some fanciful idea of what they looked like. It's what they actually did look like, you know.
And thanks to Jack O'Leary. And that book, it really is a stunning publication. As you heard, it's available from most bookshops in around the Wexford area. It costs €30. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners are on TikTok, but there's a thread running there, and on Twitter, Instagram, and the rest, that most of us will find interesting. It's called Sea Shanty TikTok, and it started over the new year when a 26-year-old Scottish singer, Nathan Evans, posted a version of a 19th century seafaring song online. Others joined in, dubbed their voices over it, and this version you're about to hear has been viewed over 20 million times.
This was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was the Billy of Tea. The winds blew up her bow, dipped down below my Billy boys blow. Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. She had not been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain called all hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow. Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Before the boat had hit the water, the whale's tail came up and caught her. Hand to the side, her pinned and fought her when she dived down low. Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave.
That song is about a whaling ship and has caused a phenomenal ride throughout the world. it's been imitated thousands of times. I looked at a few more. This one is called The Longest John. It's been recorded and dubbed over by 500 people.
The sail's all furled, our work is done.
Leave her, Johnny, leave her.
And now ashore we'll take our run.
And it's time for us to leave her. Leave her, Johnny, leave her.
Sea Shanty TikTok is really a worldwide phenomenon, with individuals getting in on it as well. Here's one I found almost at random. It's by somebody called Bill Occam's Razor Roper.
In South Australia I was born, evil way, Holloway. In South Australia, round Cape Horn, we're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you rolling king, evil way, Holloway, Holloway, oh, hear me sing, we're bound for South Australia. There ain't but one thing grieves my mind, heave away, Holloway, that's leaving Nancy Blair's behind, we're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you rolling king, heave away, Holloway, Holloway, oh, hear me sing, we're bound for South Australia. And as we wallop round Cape Horn, heave away, Holloway, you'll wish to God you'd never been born, we're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you rolling king, heave away, Holloway, Holloway, you'll hear me sing, we're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you rolling king, heave away, Holloway, Holloway, you'll hear me sing, we're bound for South Australia.
And who knows what you're going to find on social media. Oftentimes, it's an evil place, but sometimes there's a gem. Sea shanties, of course, have a big Irish influence and were very important as well on those sailing ships coming out of Wexford that we heard from earlier. We'll return to that subject on the programme in the near future. Coastal communities living close to the sea oftentimes have people locally renowned for their seafaring and in-depth knowledge of the ocean. Joanna McNicholas met one of them in Achill Island.
In the Achill Island village of Dowiga, I met Dennis McCarthy to hear about a very famous relative of his. But first, Dennis told me about his own experience as a former member of Achill Coast Guard.
I first joined the Coast Guard in 1998, and I loved every minute of the Coast Guard. I felt I was giving something back to the community. But it started up as the Coast and Cliff Rescue. And it went from the Coast and Cliff Rescue to what I joined afterwards was the Irish Marine Emergency Services. And I served from 1998 until 2016. And I was training officer for a period. I'd done my training officership in Dingle, and I trained the climbers. I also was a coxswain of the D-class, which is the smaller size of the vessel, but it was a formidable piece of kit. The Coast Guard provides a very essential service on Achill Island, especially during the summer months when we have all the visitors coming to the island. They look after the shoreline and stuff like that, and they give advice to people when needs be, or to see people in difficulty, they provide an extra service. They also provide a mountain rescue service as well. I was part of that also, and we've had our share of difficult rescue experiences, and sadly a lot of them, they weren't nice to see.
And now to Dennis's great-grandfather, also called Dennis McCarthy. And this legendary figure became known as Donnahurua, the famous Clubé pilot. And his role was to guide sailing ships safely through the dangerous waters of Clubé.
He was born in 1825, and his primary role was a sea pilot. And he piloted vessels coming into Westport Harbour, cargo vessels, under sail, into Westport Harbour. That was his job, along with fishing to sustain his own family. So he would board vessels that were coming from mostly North America, Canada, Scotland, Liverpool, and they brought in such items as flour, timber, slate, provisions to build a house. But he was a formidable man, by all accounts. He was red-haired, Donahoe Rua, and Vifesog, again, red beard, down to his chest, huge hands, broad shoulders, because on many occasions he would have to row the punt out, to intercept the vessel. Now, it wasn't a chance interception. He had a man that was what they called the lookout, and his name was Johnny Rua. And his sole occupation was, on top of Minon, looking out north-northwest for the sails of the cargo vessels, cargo ships, sailing boats, sailing vessels on the horizon. And on spotting the sails on the horizon, he would make a signal down to Donahoe Rua and his crew to put to sea to intercept this ship that would be coming. And they'd board the vessel. In modern times, vessels maybe 3 or 4, 5, 6 miles outside harbour when a pilot has to go out to bring them in. The pilot is the man, takes command of the vessel, brings it into harbour, docks it up, and then that's his duty done. On one particular occasion, he rowed out, and while he himself was able to board the ship, his small punt broke free, and it subsequently landed in on the beach in Dowiga. And people were observing the manless boat coming in, and they thought for sure that he had drowned. But he landed in Westport, piloted the boat into Westport, and it took 3 or 4 days for him to walk back down from Westport to Achill. And he even met his own cousin walking in the Dowiga Road, and he thought he was seeing a ghost, because they had already, Donahoe Rua, waked, but he managed to land home and to come into Westport, and the treacherous waters that are in Westport, currents, shallows, and not only that, the 365 islands that it include Bay, and to manoeuvre a vessel, say maybe 150 foot, 200 foot vessel, no power, sail. And a normal vessel of that size, say a frigate, would have about 26, 28 sails. Cargo vessels, they may have 18 sails.
Donahoe Rua is perhaps best known for the time his expert seamanship saved a number of lives.
Myself and a crew went to the Bills fishing in the back end of the year, around September, October. And on reaching the Bills, the weather changed dramatically and the wind got up something fierce, and they had to get out of there as quick as they can. And only before the pilot's skill in seamanship that he was able to steer his boat, a yawl at that particular time, back into Dowiga Bay, because on the trip in from the Bills, the wind was blowing southwest, so they were in danger of getting blown in under the Minon cliffs, and it was all over. And all over, really, because they would have left wives and families. But the pilot managed to get his vessel ashore, and there was great jubilations and joy that the pilot managed to get him in. And subsequently, there was a poem wrote about the pilot.
The poem was later put to music, and this is Cochni Hivna singing Auron na Bwili.
Jenegi mo kor lago fol Lage ki shir en rail ti Es me man inna njeni moj gol Ton mui landu ek chak der ar lina Agus khasn ek I bor and o mor Agus mamam mer manam na pwil dun
Joanna McNicholas on Achill Island. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We're back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the programme is podcast, and it's on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact me or the programme, the email is seascapes@rte.ie. If you're lucky enough to be anywhere on or near the water over the next week, stay safe.